Hi, welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. We've got a great show for you. I have to say, I think it's a great show. We had an amazing interview with Jane Doherty, who's going to be at Ghost World this July. She's an amazing psychic and ghost hunter and got me totally hooked on all this ghost stuff years ago. Like, I was hooked as a kid, but taking one of Jane's ghost tours definitely made me, as an adult, reconnect with a big love of mine, which is the ghost stuff. So I don't want to waste too much time, because otherwise you'll be like, oh my God, does she ever shut up? And I really want to hear the Jane Doherty interview. So that's going to be in the show. So let me just jump in. Oh, and Brian's here. Hi, Brian.
Oh, now she recognizes me. Thank you so very much.
I'm sorry.
My God.
Well, why don't we jump in and do the meeting announcements?
Oh, now it's we.
Yes. Okay, the first meeting that you're going to be having will be on May 2nd. That's the first Wednesday in May. That's the Central Jersey Division meeting. That's headed up by Gregory and Sherry Irish, and that's located in the Hazlitt Library at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. Then on May 15th, it's the Northwest Division. That's headed up by myself, and that's in the Community Center in the Blue Room, which is located at 293 Main Street in Hackettstown. And then on May 24th, we have the Northeast Division, headed up by team leader Laura Lindemann. That's in the Bogota Recreation Center, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota. All meetings start at 7 p.m. and end promptly at 8:30 p.m. and are free and open to the public to attend, so please do drop by. If you have some pictures, recordings, things you're not sure of, and you want the professional eye to look over it from a ghost perspective, bring it for share and scare at each meeting. And I should give you all a reminder, too. Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, it's a radio show podcast I'm going to be on. It's a live call-in show this Sunday, April 29th. So I will be on that show probably around 9:25 or so. It airs from 9 to 10 p.m., I guess, Eastern Time, Eastern Daylight Time, depending on where you live. Nathan Schoonover is Demon Hunter. He's a certified paranormal investigator through the NJGHS, and Nathan will be at the Ghost World Conference in July as well. So you will have to stop by and say hello to him and to his partner, Ghost Man, who I believe his name is Sean, and he's out in Illinois, and that's all I remember. So please don't be mad at me, Nathan. So we're going to go to a commercial break.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
This is Troy Taylor, founder of the American Ghost Society, and you're listening to the Deadline Podcast in the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society.
Hi, I'm Laura, and I'm here with Jane Doherty. She is a psychic medium who will be presenting a workshop, actually two workshops, at the upcoming Ghost World Conference. How are you today, Jane?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Oh, good, good. I'm so glad you could take time. I know you're busy, and I'm really glad you could spend some time with us here at the Deadline. I just got a couple questions for you because I know people are going to – this will be good. People will get to know you before the actual conference. And, well, then again, a lot of people do already know you. So this will be good. I heard that Hans Holzer, who's like – I always refer to him as the granddaddy of ghost hunting, that he proclaimed you to be one of the top 20 psychics in the world. And I was wondering how and when did he come to this conclusion or proclamation?
Well, I think it's an interesting story, and it has a little sidekick to it in the sense that years ago when I began in the field, Dr. Hans Holder was an idol of mine, and I had wished to meet him. It was just that type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, several years later, that's exactly what happened. I was invited to his apartment in New York City, and I had to do readings for him.
For him? Personally? Pardon? For him personally?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then years later, he came to the Jersey Society of Parapsychology when I was president, and he spoke at the society. And then what happened, he was writing his second book on psychics, and he asked me again to read him and to give me examples of predictions that I had made. So I did that, and the book was called The Very Best Psychics, Mediums, Astrologers.
Wow.
The Very Best, I think it was called. And then he chose 20 from that book and wrote an article in Woman's Own Magazine listing the top 20 of his choice from his books.
Wow, so that's how that came to be. That's really cool. I don't, Brian, I don't know if you know, but Jane is really famous for her ghostometer. It's her belly. It actually distends and becomes like she's 10 months pregnant when she's in the presence of spirit energy, a.k.a. a ghost. And I was wondering, Jane, like physically, what does that feel like to you? Does it hurt?
Oh, absolutely. It's a strange feeling, and it's certainly unusual. When I'm near spirit energy, my stomach will enlarge. It goes into a contraction. I can only explain it best to a woman in the sense that you would know what it is if you have a child, because it's almost like I'm in labor. There are pains that are the contractions of labor. And when you watch me closely, when it goes out, it actually lifts up at the end.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very unusual phenomenon.
Yeah, I'll say. I mean, at least you, I mean, there's no denying. You know?
Like no,
when something's around and you look at Jane, you can't deny that something's not, you know, something's
right.
here.
You can see it, even though I'm a heavy woman, but when there is a spirit around me, I mean, I really enlarge.
Now, has the, like, a medical doctor ever tracked this or given you some type of explanation, like, to kind of dismiss the whole psychic stuff and just said, oh, well, biologically, this is what happens and explains it?
Okay, there's been two instances. When I've done ghost tours at the Spy House years ago, there have been medical doctors on the ghost tour. So when my stomach has enlarged near a spirit, they immediately began feeling it from every angle and touching it and trying to figure out what in the world was happening. And, of course, at that time, no one was able to explain it to me. In recent years, I've had surgery on my stomach for two hernias. And it's a funny story when I finally said to my surgeon after the second hernia, do you think these hernias are going on because of the phenomena that happens to my stomach and that the ghosts are doing it? Well, of course, he laughed. and said to me, I can't believe I'm going to answer you with a straight face, because it had to be as a medical doctor. And he said, at that time, there is no biological explanation that he could give for my stomach doing what it does.
Wow.
But he, and yet, you know, he's been inside my stomach twice.
so he would know.
He would know best. And, you know, he just got a big kick out of the fact that he was going to have to answer that question. And 2 years ago, when I released my book, I decided to send him an invitation for him and his family. And I was quite honored because he was a skeptic, and he came to the book release party.
Oh, good.
So it was fun. It was a different experience to have your medical doctor there.
Yeah, right.
Who I converted.
And, you know, really, I've had, like, the whole hiatal hernia thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, well, you kind of get that from when after you've had pregnancies and stuff, and, you know, it's all that weight
right.
gain, and it pushes things out of whack. So I can only imagine what, I mean, yours is, like, instant pregnancy, like, boom. You know, I mean,
and there's something also interesting that happens to it, that it actually is, as you would say, a ghostometer, because I can tell, it's my first clue, whether it's a male, a female, or a child spirit around me, based on the way it grips me, how far, you know, up it grips me, I can tell this.
Oh,
when
that's
it's a child,
amazing.
The grip and the contractions only go up to the belly button.
Huh.
So it's interesting. It really is interesting.
Now, what if you're getting something beyond, like, man, woman, and child, like something really more nasty and demonic?
I would have other kinds of feelings. That would happen, but I probably would start to feel dizzy.
Okay.
Some other phenomenon would go on it, because after my stomach, doing this for years, it's been happening since around 1988, that you would know instantly if something was out of whack.
Yeah.
Because you've gotten so used to feeling what it feels like for a child, a man, and a woman.
Wow, that's true. Oh, God. And I would really, like, I would be bummed. I'm sorry. I would be like, you know, I'm trying to go to the gym and do crunches and tighten the abs, and some spirit walks by and undoes everything I did.
Well, I sometimes joke on my ghost tours and say that I wish that they would do something different and kind of suck me in rather than enlarge me.
Yeah, right?
Help me out a little bit. But so far they haven't done that.
We're going to have to talk with them. You know, it's bad enough everybody's issued regulation white, you know, when you cross over. You have to be the lady in white. You know, there's no Donna Karen.
That's,
and now they
right.
can't even give you instant lipo. They.
That's true.
Oh, God. So I know, I remember years ago, that's how I got all back into this stuff. We had taken your tour at the Spy House.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally had a couple things happen on that tour. And I remember the first one was, we were waiting for our turn for the tour. I guess you were already off doing one in progress. And I was standing there with my then husband, Jeff, and we were waiting in that one, I guess, front parlor room where they had all the taxidermied animals.
Yeah.
And we're looking at the mantle, and all of a sudden I smell someone smoking a pipe. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and before he could even say, oh, God, you're going to get a headache, because he knows all my migraine allergies and stuff. It was, like, gone. And we both looked at each other. We're like, you smelled that, right? He goes, yeah, did you? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, well, it's gone. That's weird. And then we had the whole episode on the stairs. And when we got up to where you were, we told you about what happened. And you were doing the whole stomach thing where Robert the Pirate used to come through in the corner there.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I've seen all this. This got me totally hooked into all this stuff. And I have to ask you, what for you, what's been the most frightening experience you've had while on a ghost investigation?
Well, I would have to say that the most frightening has been when I actually did the first paranormal DVD series at Ghost Lake on Shades of Death Road. It wasn't an investigation per se, but I had never been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was investigating it as a documentary for a video.
Okay.
And what had happened is, we did a seance inside the log cabin, and that was intense enough. And we've captured on the video, actually, a mist that goes by as my stomach is out.
Oh, wow.
And then we had to do a seance right by the lake after midnight. And that is where, supposedly, ghosts have been seen over the years.
Right, right. I know I mean, actually, you're right. What's in now my backyard? I'm a 15-minute ride from where I live to Shades of Death, and
really,
yeah. Who knew I'd end up? You know, a classic. You know, if I'm going to relocate, I might as well move to a haunted town where Shades of Death Road is right up the street.
Oh wow!
But, yeah.
Well, that is where it unnerved me as I tried to do the seance outside.
Wow.
I felt somebody was watching us.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to move the group and just start across, and then all of a sudden a light appeared out of nowhere.
Really?
And was suspended. And you could see that it didn't reflect the middle of the lake. It only reflected near us, yet it was far away.
Oh, wow.
It was bizarre. And then one of the guys participating felt something behind him. And he turned rapidly, and when they looked at the video, you actually can see something go up under his shirt, because he felt somebody was touching him, and nothing was that we could see. And then, you know, we went on, and we went to another area where I was now going to see closer to the lake, and when I got there is no way I wanted to stay. I told the group, we're in danger. We need to get out of here. And at that, my stomach enlarged. And that time, I knew it was my guide confirming what I had just said.
Oh, okay.
And I said, let's go. And so we left. And we were supposed to sleep there for the night in the log cabins. And I refused to. And what had happened next is we left in two cars, and we left together. But the producer never got to the log cabin. And 20 minutes went by. And I was really upset. And you know, the other driver of the car didn't seem to be. But I kept getting very upset because I knew he was behind us. And because of my feeling of danger. Then what happened, he came and he told us that as he pulled out behind us, out of nowhere, a black car with black windows that you couldn't see in, and it looked like there were black men in there, like black clothed men, rather.
Yeah.
And they began to follow him. And he had to turn a different way. When we got to the stop sign, we went to the way of the log cabin. The producer went the other way to distract this person who was following, and the car didn't know which way to go.
Wow.
And then it just disappeared.
Oh, that's
so
wild.
That it was my most frightening experience investigating ghosts. I would not stay there that night. The producer wants me to go back there, and I tell him, no way.
Yeah, you go up there.
You will not get me to do a seance in the middle of the woods.
You know, and not for nothing, even if it weren't like the whole spirit threat,
right.
It's the black bear thing. I mean, that area is crawling.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I figured that might have been the danger, if anything, you were sensing of, like, we're about to be somebody's dinner. We better get out of here, you know?
I don't know what it was, but I sure was frightened. And I don't frighten easily.
Right.
You know, I'm usually okay, and, you know, I get a little frightened, but I don't frighten easily. But I knew we were in danger. Something was going to happen while we were there. And I felt eyes on us. I felt something was really watching us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite an experience. And I won't go back. And it's funny, when you watch the video, I get scared all over again. And whoever has watched it, like my daughter and a dear friend of mine, who know what I do, have been on some of the seances with me and in haunted places, they get scared out of their minds watching this.
Wow.
Because you could just, because they could observe me getting frightened. You could observe the group getting frightened. And you could feel that something is around.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a place I told them, not going back.
Yeah.
You're on your own if you want me to go there again.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone up there, you know, because sometimes people ask me about it. And when we did Morbid Mobile Tours, you know, we made that one of the, of course, you had to take people out Shades
right.
of Death Road. And the one night, I think it was Halloween night, we were doing the midnight tour, and we were coming back up Shades of Death. And, of course, we get pulled over by one of the park rangers, you know,
mm-hmm.
one of those conservation officers. And, you know, so there, the whole cop light's going, and, of course, they walk up to the hearse. I already had the brochure ready for Morbid Mobile Tours. I'm like, here you go. And the cop is like, you're doing a tour? I'm like, yeah, I'm in progress. And he shined the light into the back of the hearse, and there are all these people waving at him. He's like, and he shines the light back to his buddy, and he's like, dude, they're on a ghost tour. I'm like, yeah, can we get back to work now? So they're like,
that's
oh, we're going to look
funny.
Up the site when we get back. But, you know, yeah, and it's weird. I mean, it's a dangerous street just in and of itself because there's no lights.
Right.
And we pointed that out to people on the tour. Like, you can be going up, and we would just shut the lights of the hearse off, and it's completely black. And then you turn them back on, and you're looking at a guardrail just barely masking a huge boulder. I mean, you could drive right into the side of a cliff if you're not paying attention, you know?
Absolutely.
It's a deadly stretch of road.
It is.
Yeah, I could, oof. Now, I know the lake itself is man-made. One conservation officer told me that it was man-made in the 50s, and all the stories about the bride and the groom drowning in it and the Indians and everything never really happened. That's just tales. But you can't fight the fact that it's the malaria was a real deal up there, and Indians dropping dead coming back from their battle and everything because they were dying from their battle wounds, plus, you know, the malaria and the mosquitoes, and then it got to be a really nasty hangout. So it's got a nasty history and energy to it, and it's an overall danger. But Yeah, after living out here, I've come to realize, like, everywhere we go walking, I used to just always be afraid of snakes. Now I actually got to be looking over my shoulders. Every time I hear a branch break, I'm like, is it a deer or is it a bear? You know?
Oh, I would be a nervous wreck there. Ghosts don't bother me, but bears do.
I'm like, I don't think I stand too much of a chance with them. The ghosts I could handle. So I saw, I caught a couple episodes when you were on, you starred on Dead Tenants. I think that was on TLC.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any word of that show? Because are they going to re-air it for, or come up with some new ones for 2007 and Halloween?
We still haven't heard the final word to this yet. We know now that it is playing in Europe. I've just gotten a fan mail from someone in India and in Belgium. So it's played in several countries internationally.
Wow, that's great.
And we're just waiting to hear what's going to happen next. There were 10 episodes videotaped. However, they only played 5 here in the United States.
Right, right.
And
I
there
think
was rumors last year that they were going to hold on to it and then attempt to come back with it and pretend it was a whole new show. So I have no idea. And even our producers are not privy to this information at this point.
Well, hopefully, though.
We have to wait to see. Hopefully it will be.
So what was your favorite episode? I guess of the 5 that aired, since people wouldn't know how to relate to the 5 that didn't, or was it one of the 5 that didn't?
Actually, it's one of the 5 that have not been aired. I actually feel the 5 that has not been aired are the best episodes.
Oh, wow.
I mean, as we progressed in knowing how to proceed with taping a show like this, a documentary, we only got better. The producers got better. You began to know exactly what you had to do.
And then even you're just working as a team, your energy's probably gelled more.
Exactly. The bugs were out. We knew the timing of things. I never did any walkthrough in any house that we investigated before 3 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
And I did it somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6. So I had to stay up all night and then be psychically accurate and not tired and go in to psychically determine what they perceived.
And, of course, they never tell the viewer that that's the kind of pressure and strain you were under.
Oh, no. Nobody
knows. Which is not fair. People are watching it thinking, she's not on her game. And, my God, who would be at 3 o'clock in the morning?
That was probably the most difficult. But it's funny. I was the oldest member of the team. But they could not believe, because I was the one that had the energy. The producers would be falling asleep, the crew, and they would look at me and say, how do you do this? And that's why they had me go last, because the other team members were so tired.
Yeah.
And I just said, it's the psychic energy.
Exactly.
When you've got that revved up, it will keep you going. You can get through fatiguing situations.
That is true. I remember back in the day when I used to do psychic entertaining, and I was weird. I would be driving home just completely wired as if I had 10 cups of coffee, but without the jitters, And then I'd get home and I'm like, I better eat something grounding, like a big burger, so I can knock myself out.
Oh, yeah, sure. But we never had more than 3 hours sleep.
I wonder, because you guys were pulling all-nighters on those, right?
Yeah.
That was a lot.
I learned something about sleep deprivation, and it was a pattern. We didn't get home. We didn't leave the site until maybe 2 a.m. Monday morning, and I would come home, and then Monday during the day, I would tell my mother and my sister what happened, but I was not functioning in my normal energy, and so I wouldn't dare take a client before a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Because I didn't return to a feeling of normalcy until sometimes Tuesday during the day. And that amazed me, because you really felt that whole pattern.
Yeah. And plus, you were using, your own adrenaline. I know you had the psychic energy, but physically the body had to keep up with that. That's quite a huge reset button to push on the human body to put it back,
It is. So. And it was something that it taught me something. It's something I never experienced before. So it was a very interesting experience, and it was repetitive. Every week, that's what happened.
Wow.
So I knew that's where it was coming from. So it was different. But I would say my favorite, actually I have 2 favorites.
Okay.
Is episode 8, because we was at a haunted junkyard in upstate New York. Hmm. And that was a very unique experience because we had to stay in a trailer. We had our dinner in the middle of this 20-acre junkyard.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we did a lot of the investigating at night on a junkyard that had no lights.
Oh, wow.
And so it was very different in that respect. What was also different about it is the people were almost, well, I guess you would have to say they were almost as though they were backwoods from mm-hmm. years ago, because they're out in the wilderness in a junkyard. So it was a different kind of person. And
like if they get divorced, are they still sister and brother? Or?
It was two sisters and, oh, okay. and a father, and it was the mother and father were divorced. But it was the mother who was giving the two daughters a hard time about the ghosts that they had seen
wow.
on the property. And so there was a constant battle, and that was part of, you know, the skeptic, and it was part of what we were trying to resolve. What was amazing, absolutely amazing, by the time this had finished, the mother, who completely would berate the two girls and didn't believe any of this, the transformation in her was incredible.
Wow.
And she became a total believer, and you could just see the process and the changes that went on and the aha moments, and it was unbelievable. So that was my favorite for that.
Wow.
My other one is episode 10, and my favorite there was because without a doubt, 100% I can be sure that a spirit clearly communicated to me, and I followed the spirit's instructions, and as a result, uncovered what he was trying to get me to do. And that had to do with a church that was nearby that I had no idea. And he directed me across the land, and it was in the dark.
Hmm.
And nobody knew what this was. And everybody else had said it was a place for the sick and whatever, and I had a strange reaction there. I was swaying as though I was going to go in trance by my walkthrough.
Wow.
And what it turned out to be historically is that the house we were in was a minister's house. He never stayed in it, but it was for revival meetings, and everybody would sway. And then what he was leading me to was his church that he took from New York City, brick by brick.
Wow.
And then it turned out to be why he was sending me there, is that his father also was a preacher. And as I got into this church where he led me, I'm trying to find out, okay, why? Why am I here? What are you trying to tell me? And I saw a plaque on the wall. And I'm looking at it, and it's a sermon. And I was focusing there, and my stomach went out as he led me. And then what I realized, and the girl from the house realized the date of it, was the date of his father, his last sermon before he died. And that book that was in the house that they were going to throw out, because mm-hmm. nobody knew what it was, had that date on it. So that's what the spirit was trying to get me to do, was to bring that book to the church so they didn't throw it out, because the church was now going to be an historical place.
Oh, wow.
It was incredible. There was no question about how the spirit communicated and how I followed it and what was resolved at the end. So that was a favorite simply because of that. It was just an incredible experience.
Wow. That is really cool. You see how it's interesting how things, then they make sense? And after that, the spirit was pretty much, like, did he bother them still, or was he at peace and it just kind of left?
No, he was at peace at that point. And then that book was actually presented to the historical society who was going in, was placed back in the church.
Hmm. So now everything is right with the world as far
mm-hmm.
as he's concerned.
Otherwise, it would have been thrown out.
Ugh. And that would have been tragic.
And that's what he was trying to communicate to me, that he was, you know, so upset over.
Jeez.
Really, it was fascinating for that reason. It was just an unbelievable case and how it got resolved and how the puzzle just unfolded as I proceeded.
That's where people have to really give this credit and some credence, because, you know, there are certain things you can write off as, oh, that's coincidence. But when something is as particular or specific as a book needing to be in a church.
Exactly.
You know, how do they just, like, dismiss that? That's, you know?
You can't when things like that happen. I think there was another time during a seance that I knew instantly you can't rationalize it away. I was getting two names, Grace and a Robert, and nobody was relating to it. And then what was happening is I'm seeing an image of a cemetery, and I'm seeing a crumbling gravestone. And I'm saying, something is wrong with the gravestone, he's saying. Nobody related to it. There was nobody that knew a Grace and a Robert.
Hmm.
What happened, a week later, I got an email from a person that was in the seance. And what had happened is she went to see her friend, whose name was Robert. And his father had just died. And his fiance, Grace, was handling the arrangements. And when she went to the cemetery where he was supposed to be buried, he couldn't be buried there because the cemetery had been vandalized and all the cemetery stones were crumbled where he was supposed to be.
Oh, my God.
You know, so there's absolutely, to me, 100% proof, because nobody knew that information, so that it was no mind reading.
Exactly.
From anybody that was in the group.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like you were reading someone there. This was truly
a
spirit.
And he died, I think they said, about 24 hours before the seance.
Oh.
So, you know, it was just an incredible situation.
That is. So your new book, Awakening the Mystic Gift, it sounds like an owner's manual of, like, psychic ability of sorts. And I can't wait to read it, but I admit I haven't read it yet. don't be mad at me. But how would you, like, how best would you describe the contents of the book, and, like, who would benefit most from reading it?
Okay. I would describe it as it's a memoir on how I became psychic.
Okay.
But along the way, you're going through every step that I went through and encountered, the challenges, the doubt, the first initial experiences I had, some of the things I did to open it up and develop it further. But it's not in a how-to, and this is what you do, but it's more you read it through the story.
Okay.
And then there's insights at the end of each chapter of what I learned at that stage of the game about life and about the ability.
Ah.
And it goes through, you know, throughout the whole book. Now, what benefits, you know, a lot of people are saying, one, they can identify with my experiences, and then they get the aha, I do have psychic ability, where they've been doubting all along and pushing it away, so then they have the courage to go forward. Another benefit is when people start to mock you, that, oh, you don't have that, or your family gives you problems. A lot of readers have been saying, since reading my book, they have the courage to counteract that now and not let it bother them, and to keep following their own inner truth.
Wow.
And then there's another one that I just love, and it seems to be a pattern. I can't tell you how many people have told me. It seems to be the fifth chapter, which begins the dreams, the dream chapter. And it seems as though there's a pattern I'm finding, that when after people read that chapter, it seems they start having dreams, and they start having psychic experiences. It seems to trigger something off in them.
Oh, okay.
Which is really neat.
That is. That, you know,
really
I remember,
do
you remember
cool
the book?
That's happening.
Do you remember the book years ago? It was by Marion Zimmer Bradley, Mists of Avalon.
Uh-huh.
Well, I remember I got introduced to it because a friend that I was working with, she brought it over to me, and she goes, well, I finished reading this, it's your turn. I'm like, what do you mean? I looked at the size of that thing, and I was like, it's mammoth. I'm like, are you nuts? I'm like, I barely get to read, like, just the headlines in the Daily Record, let alone I'm going to sit and read this huge book, you know? And she goes, no. She goes, it was given to me by a friend, and we've started this tradition, and I'm like the 15th person, and every person reads the book and then has to pass it on to another friend to read and then pass it on. I'm like, fine, so it's my turn. So I sat down that night, and I started to read just the first few. I thought, oh, I'll read a couple pages and appease her. And yet I was hooked. And, like, in the space of a week, I knocked that book out. And by day three, I'm coming into work, and she looks at me, she goes, so, how you sleeping? How were your dreams? And I'm like, Yeah, the dream. She goes, uh-huh. And that's when she started to tell me every person that, like, read the book and would pass it on would say, you know, by day three or four when you're reading this book, your dreams just start to become so vivid and you start, I don't know if it unlocks some type of cellular memory or something in the person reading the book that they identify on some past life level with this story, but wow.
Yeah, I think that's what happens, and I think that there's energy imprinted in words and in the way of the flow of it, and that could be part of it, and I think that's what's happening in my book.
Yeah.
Because I wrote it from I didn't just sit down and write it. It's like every word, every few words, it was almost coming through me from the psychic part of my mind.
Right.
As I told the story. And so that was like imprinting energy. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to be that chapter on dreams is where it must get the first level of intensity. And in that intensity and concentration, it begins to open up the ability. Because that is a step in opening up the ability.
That's true.
It's that concentration. That's where it happens in the book.
And just getting people to even, like, start to... The dream journaling is powerful. I can remember years ago people did a lot of classes on that and stuff. And it's amazing. It's real... Oh, wow. I can't wait to get this book and read it. So just so people know, because I know you're pressed for time, and I don't want to keep you too long, but... So I don't know if you knew this, Brian, but Jane is a mom. She has two kids. She's got family obligations galore, full-time business owner, which she does hypnotherapy in addition to the psychic readings. She's an author. Okay, so how do you maintain your work-life balance, Jane? I mean, do you find any quiet time for yourself?
Not too much. But I've no stress management, and that's what's really helping, because I used to teach it. And when I get into my whirl and I'm running around and I don't know which way to go first, I always remember to breathe, is to take a couple of deep breaths, because at least that's releasing the harmful chemicals that are circulating at that point.
Really?
Oh, yes, yes. So that's a big factor, because I used to teach it, and even just 5 minutes of sitting quiet and just taking some breathing, or even in the midst of that, just taking deep breaths, even though you're not quiet, will help. And then doing that, it helps to release it. And the other technique that I practice is priority. I've learned from the stress management, which is helping me to deal with everything I'm dealing with today, is to, when you get into that frenzy and you've got so much to do, it's like I quickly prioritize and I focus only what the deadline is for the first thing.
Oh, the deadline. I like that.
And then I'll go to the second thing, and I quickly do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, then instantly I relax. So those are the techniques I use.
Now, do you still teach the stress management courses?
I still have that, yes.
Okay. And now, your site is janedougherty.com, and people could get in touch with you through the site in terms of booking if they want a psychic reading or ghost investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And can they order your book through the site?
They can order my book through the site.
And what about the DVDs you said you did, the documentaries?
Yes. The ghost DVD is called Jane Doherty Investigates. That's on my site. That's also online on Amazon, as well as the book, and in various video stores. And the book is also in Borders and Barnes & Noble.
Wow, great.
So it is out there. And even the DVD, I get a big kick out of it, because I go online every now and then and I discover it is it's being downloaded in foreign countries.
Oh, no.
Foreign countries, and people do speak English, so they want to download it, which is, to me, is funny.
Well, you know, hey, there's a compliment there.
It's just like Dead Tenants was dubbed in Turkish for the Saudi Arabia, Turkey area.
That's cool, though.
Oh, yes.
So then your book will eventually probably be translated,
sometime it will.
Wow. Well, excellent. Well, I'm so looking forward to your workshops and to seeing you at Ghost World in July. I know we've sold out your Friday night spirit circle, and your Saturday night one is booking up rapidly. So this is going to be quite a big deal this July. I'm really looking forward to it.
I am, too. It should be really good.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much, Jane, for taking time and chatting with us. I really appreciate it. And We'll look forward to seeing you in July at Ghost World Conference. And again, people, you can definitely catch Jane at www.janedoherty. It's DOHERTY.com. We'll definitely have the link to Jane's site on the Deadline page when the show airs, which will be this show is going to upload Friday, April 27th. Right, Brian? Now I've held him to it. All right. Thanks, Jane.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Okay.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Parashare.
I guess we need the music, huh?
Yeah. And we don't have any Parashares tonight. However, I do have a pretty cool story to tell you about. In the 1964 hit, I don't know if you remember this group, Brian. Brian didn't remember them. Jan and Dean. He even thought Jan was a woman. But his real name was William Jan Barry, and it was Dean Torrance. They formed the band Jan and Dean in the late 50s. Well, anyway, in 1964, they had a hit called Dead Man's Curve. Now, it turned out to be a tragic reality for Jan when 2 years later, on April 12, 1966, he crashed his Stingray, which was a Corvette, into the back of a parked truck. The brain damage and paralysis he suffered from that accident left him unable to speak, let alone sing. So basically, this young guy, he was riding the crest of the wave in terms of being popular and everything. Wow. The duo were riding, yeah, like I said, they were really very popular. They made the surf sound popular, like the Beach Boys and everything. And in fact, like they had the songs, Little Old Lady from Pasadena? You've heard of that one. That was theirs in Surf City. That's what really set the whole thing of two girls for every boy became like the big slogan. And Jan had co-wrote a lot of hits, too, with Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. Jan eventually regained his vocals and even toured with Dean following the revival of their popularity in 1978 thanks to the made-for-TV movie Dead Man's Curve, which they had actors portray everything that happened with Jan having his tragic accident. And it's amazing when you read how grueling it was for the rehabilitation and everything that this... I mean, he had to learn to talk, to walk... I mean, basic functions all over again, but they said they never saw anyone like with such determination as Jan. Anyway, sadly, Jan died at the age of 62 on March 26, 2004. He would have turned 63 on April 3rd that year. And you can check out more history of Jan Barry and Dean Torrance at www.janandean-janbarry.com. I will put the link on the Deadline page. Now, many people speculate about where the actual Dead Man's Curve is. And I was even wondering this, too, because I'm hoping to get out to California this summer. Now, given the lyrics of the song, one can narrow it down to Los Angeles, because they say, come off the line at Sunset and Vine. And I was looking through some postings to find an answer to this question, and one person posted the following. Exactly where Los Angeles's version of Dead Man's Curve can be found is the subject of some debate, but by general consensus, it's a tight corner of Sunset Boulevard near the Bel Air Estates, north of UCLA's Drake Stadium. Most people would suspect Mulholland Drive, as did I. Other postings from people on the net list this curve as a winding piece of road that bears witness to many accidents. Now, to take this to the even creepier level, let's fast forward to 1980, when bandaged musician Nash the Slash comes out with a cover of the song Dead Man's Curve on his album Children of the Night. Now, Nash would record his music by himself in the sewers of Canada. He did not allow anyone to see him. When he would perform in public, he would bandage his head like a mummy. On some of his songs, his voice is deep and reminiscent of the late Jim Morrison. In fact, for a while, people wondered if this was truly Jim Morrison, as there was a lot of mystery and confusion surrounding Jim's death and burial. You know all that, right, Brian?
Of course.
Okay. Like when I remember as a teenager when we were in Paris and that everybody was going to go and make the trip to Mecca, a.k.a. visit Jim Morrison's grave, I was the one that stood there and said, I refuse to go. To me, he is not dead. I can't go to the grave and, you know, whatever.
Hey, you said that the other day.
What? Oh, You'll get to listen to Nash's... Anyway, there was a lot of confusion surrounding Jim Morrison's death and burial, but who knows. Anyway, you're going to get to listen to Nash's version of Dead Man's Curve. And what I want you to remember is all the music you hear in this tune is performed by one single man,
Okay, he never had a band with him. He would record all the tracks and do everything himself because he didn't want anybody to see who he really is. So here you go. Enjoy.
The largest and most comprehensive ghost conference the paranormal world has ever seen is coming to Gettysburg, July 20th to 22nd, 2007, at the newly constructed Wyndham Gettysburg Hotel and Conference Center. At this supernatural summit will be close to 3,000 square feet of space, where the paranormal community will come together toward excellence in the field of study as well as establish standards and protocols in the science of supernatural research. Best-selling authors and paranormal presenters include John Zaffis, Mark Skuerman, Mark Moran, Jeff Belanger, Charles Ammons III, Troy Taylor, and Vince Wilson. Special event co-hosts will be none other than Mark Nesbitt, author of the Ghost of Gettysburg series. Ghost hunters, be prepared to shop the largest paranormal trade show with vendors of ghost hunting gear, authors and books, and other fascinating otherworldly goods. Register for one of the intensive workshops, take a ghost tour with Mark Nesbitt aboard a train, or tune into the dead with Jane Doherty, psychic medium. All details are at the Ghost World Conference website at www.ghostworldconference.com. Register online at the site www.ghostworldconference.com with PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, or e-check. Group discounts available for groups of 10 or more. Please email info@ghostworldconference.com. for details. All sales are final. Ghost World Conference is a production of Ghost World LLC with sponsorship by X-Zone Radio.
Hey, we have a new contest. Now's your chance to win admission to the Ghost World Conference. You can attend the Ghost World Conference in July at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. All you have to do is record yourself telling or reading your favorite ghost story or experience. This can be from a published work or from one of your own investigations. Now, you can be as dramatic and creative as you want. In fact, the more the better. We're not looking for the humdrum read here, people. Come on, it's a podcast after all. We need the story to come alive for the listeners. You're not allowed to make up a ghost story or experience. Again, you can tell one that you sincerely experienced or one that is published in a book or article somewhere that you claim is your favorite of all time. Don't worry if we receive the same story from more than one person. Again, your creative and dramatic approach to the telling of the story is what will win you the votes. That's right, votes. In keeping with the American Idol approach, we will let our listeners decide on whose story and its telling is the best and therefore who deserves to go to Ghost World Conference. Submit your recording no later than May 15, 2072, the deadline, at njghs.net. If the file is too big to email, then burn it off to a CD and snail mail it to The Deadline, P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Brian and I will review these recordings and play them on the show as well. We will narrow it down to the top five and place those recordings on the Deadline page of the NJGHS website for voting. The voting will be from June 1st to 15th and the winner announced on the June 22nd podcast. In addition to admission to the Ghost World Conference, the winner will receive an NJGHS gift basket, including a bumper sticker, t-shirt, baseball hat, and an autographed copy of The Ghosts of Gettysburg by Mark Nesbitt. Winner is responsible for all costs. This is including travel, lodging, meals, expenses incurred while at the conference. Basically, we get you there, people. That's it. Okay, a room will be held at the Ghost World Conference rate of $119 at the Wyndham Gateway Gettysburg, but the winner is responsible for payment of this cost. Even if you have already registered for the conference, you may enter this contest. If you win, your registration fee will be refunded to you by the NJGHS, and you will get the basket of goodies as specified prior. So get to it, record your MP3 or WAV file, and email it or snail mail it to the Deadline. All these details will be on the NJGHS.net website. Good luck. Okay, it's time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week you were asked, what was the name of the bleach blonde vampire on Angel and Buffy? The answer is Spike, also known as William the Bloody, and the actor was James Marsters. Congratulations to Nathan Schoonover, who wins the shirt and bumper sticker, as he identified the actor as well. So, kudos to Nathan. Now, this week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of fairly easy. A couple of weeks ago, we discussed various monsters on the show. One of them was the werewolf. What is the term for this disorder? Okay. Bonus points if you can identify the language it is derived from. Be the first person to email the correct answer to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win the Junior Ghost Hunters t-shirt. Woohoo! Okay, now don't forget the Ghost World Presenter Dinner. Ghost World Conference Presenter Dinner is now up, and you can register. We are having people register. It's going pretty quickly, so if you want to have a really good meal to eat Saturday night at the conference, plus get to meet up close and personal to various presenters, make sure you register for that. It's only $50 per person, includes tax and tip. And June 15th is the last day to register online at all for anything Ghost World related. Now, if you're a member of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society and want the $85 buddy rate, the date to register for that is April 30th, so time is ticking, people. We're down to the wire here. You must email me so I can verify your membership, and I will send you the private link to register for $85. Again, that expires April 30th. My email is laurah@njghs.net. Huh, what else? Oh, and your Paranormal Award nominations. You know, we're getting flooded in from Missouri Paranormal. So if there's any other listeners out there from other states who want their voice is heard and to get their nominations in the top five that will be voted on for the awards, you've got to really got your work cut out for you, because Missouri Paranormal Group is really like slamming in the nominations. So there you have it.
Oh, and just as a little follow-up, Brian and I, as you know, filmed with TF1, I believe it was, right, Sarah?
Yes.
And Emmanuel from the TF1 station in France at Eastern State a couple weeks ago. And I got an email from her, and so did Brian. She's arrived safely back in Paris. And they ended up, the night after they came to my house and did my interview and then followed me to our monthly meeting for the Northwest Division, the next day they drove out to Rhode Island and got to interview Jason and Grant of TAPS. I gave her three shirts because I thought she was only going to interview Grant, and it turns out Grant has five kids, so, I mean, interview Jason. Originally that was the deal, but Grant ended up being there. She got to interview both of them, and so Grant ended up taking the Junior Ghost Hunter t-shirts because he has three kids, and... Sorry, Jason, I didn't know you were so virile. Not five children. So next time, you know, if I know there's going to be a next time, I will make sure there's five shirts because I don't want your kids to feel slighted. I feel just awful. I thought he had three and Grant had two, but they're both very. Well, I guess you're not a plumber for for nothing, you know. They're very productive. But anyway, so yeah, so there's three first-generation TAPS kids now with New Jersey Ghost Hunter, Junior Ghost Hunter t-shirts.
And I'm sure they love them.
I know. They're probably like, Daddy, can we clean the car with this?
See, I was probably thinking, oh, yep, blow your nose with it.
Yeah, or Grant just left it in the trunk thinking, well, you know what, if we're on the road and one of the kids throws up, at least I got something to put them in, you know? Anyway, I hope they got the shirts and that they enjoy them, and that's probably the closest contact I will ever have with Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson. So I'm happy. To me, it's like, you know, because, and Sarah had even asked me, she goes, well, what do you, you know, it's so funny because she has that very sweet French accent. So, what do you think of Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson? And I'm like, well, you know, they're basically gods in the ghost hunting world in this country because they... I know, poor Brian, he's like, oh, please. But seriously, when you have to give credit where credit is due. They got the show on Sci-Fi, and it pushed ghost hunting into a lot of people's living rooms who otherwise wouldn't have really given a hoot about it. And I told her, I said, I think in the ghost hunting community, a lot of people got their noses out of joint, and a lot of egos got bruised. And, you know, you can't, she said, well, do you think they do the real deal? Do they do a good job? I said, yeah, you know, they're, I said, I'm sure a lot of the drama stuff that's edited into the show is just because the editor figures we got to throw some drama in. Because, you know what we do is not all dramatic. It is really not something you could have a half hour show made out of because you shut the lights off, you sit in the dark, and you wait for something to...
Actually, if the show was a half hour, it probably would have been better.
So, I really, in all honesty, think a lot of people just were jealous. You know, that, oh, you know, yeah, those two, they got a show. And it's like, you know what, dudes, like, you know, check your ego at the door. At least they got what we do out into the mainstream. You don't have to be embarrassed anymore. You can walk into, I told her how when I went to the Tewksbury Inn, I just flat out asked to the waitress, you got any ghosts here? She starts talking right about it. I mean, I can tell you in the old days when I first started out ghost hunting, you did not come out and ask like that. You went under the guise of having a birthday dinner or an anniversary dinner, and then you were covertly trying to take your camera and pretend you were taking a picture of your spouse when you're really shooting at the ceiling to see if you could catch an orb, you know what I mean? And now it's so different, and I really, you have to give credit where credit's due. That show pushed it more into mainstream consciousness. Right, Brian?
Okay.
Oh, anyway. So listen, make sure you stay tuned to the NJGHS website and check out, you know, sign up for our Yahoo groups so you get all the latest and greatest infos. We'll be doing the cemetery hunt soon. I got to get that all put together. And what else? And the ghostworldconference.com website. You can register there online for that. So, and stuff is booking up. We've sold out the Friday Night Spirit Circle for Jane. We've sold out John Zaffis's workshop. We're booking up on Troy Taylor's workshop, and Saturday Night Spirit Circle is booking up, so, you know.
Friday Night Pub Crawl, yeah!
I know, it's like, Vince, like, are we ever going to get this on the website? Because, you know, or I think, you know, it'll just be like, we'll show up and, you crawling? Yeah, I'm crawling, and we'll just go, you know.
Fine with me.
Fine with me.
All right, so thanks to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the king.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Laura Lindemann. And Don Slepian of donslepian.com for our theme song, I Can Talk, Dance of the Dead. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly because at some point in life you have to meet the deadline.